Hello, and welcome to the President's Podcast of the Tarrant County Young Lawyers Association, also known as the TCYLA. My name is Austin Gardner, and I am the current president of the TCYLA. The goal of this podcast is to discuss all things legal in Tarrant County, Fort Worth, Texas. Today's topic is a new series called, Things I Wish I Knew as a Young Attorney, where we will be discussing tips and tricks as you begin the practice of law. Today's topic is Networking 101. Today, I'm joined by two guests, Brian Singletary and Andrea Palmer. Andrea Palmer is a Vice President of Legal and Compliance and Corporate Counsel at Higginbotham Insurance Agency Incorporated here in Fort Worth, Texas. Andrea graduated with a BA in History from the University of Texas and cum laude from Baylor School of Law, which she attended on a full academic scholarship. After law school, Andrea litigated with the law firm of Anderson & Riddle, LLP, in Fort Worth. Andrea represented aviation clients in state and federal court throughout the United States. In 2018, Andrea joined Higginbotham, where she now serves as corporate counsel. Andrea oversees legal and compliance matters with a focus on legal as a problem solver and business driver. Brian Singletary is an associate in the Fort Worth offices of Haynes & Boone Litigation Practice Group. He handles disputes in both state and federal courts. Brian grew up in Marlow, Oklahoma, a small town where everyone knew everyone and networking was not necessary. After graduating from the University of Oklahoma, he moved to Fort Worth to attend Texas A&M Law School, where he graduated first in his class. Before joining Haynes & Boone, he worked in a small office doing plaintiff's work as an assistant district attorney in Tarrant County in a mid-sized firm doing family law, personal injury cases, and business cases, and as a judicial law clerk for Judge Pittman and Judge Means. Brian has also served as the president of the TCYLA. For the Tarrant County Bar Association, he has been the chair of the membership committee, the People's Law School committee, and the business litigation section. He is also a barrister in the Mahon Inn of Court. Andrea has also been a president before Brian on the TCYLA. So we got two past presidents and myself, the current president. It's quite packed of presidential power in this group right now. Andrea, Brian, thank you for joining our podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for inviting us, Alston.
Absolutely. So networking 101. Before I kind of get into this, I kind of want to establish a couple things. I consider myself on the high end of the spectrum when it comes to being an extrovert. And I think that one of you is more like me than the other. Andrea, would you describe yourself more as an extrovert or an introvert?
Alston, how do you know that about me, that I'm such an extrovert? I'm definitely an extrovert, love talking to people, love meeting new people. So networking, quote unquote, isn't hard for me. But it can also sometimes turn into, well, I just need to talk to one more person because it's so fun.
And Brian, how would you describe yourself as far as extrovert or introvert?
Very much an introvert. I have to almost prepare myself before going into any event with a lot of people. I think once I get there, I do fine. People don't think I'm a weird shy person or something to that effect, but it's definitely something that drains my energy and I have to prepare for it, kind of recharge after these events.
Yeah. So, and I think that's important, is that you don't have to be an extreme extrovert to network. I mean, I think anyone can do it, but I do think obviously if you're an introvert, it does require a little more preparation. So I think when it comes to networking, everyone has to prepare. Everyone has to prepare to some degree. How did you prepare when it came to networking, Brian?
I was very uncomfortable with the whole idea of networking in law school. Like I put in the bio, I never needed any sort of networking in high school. In undergrad, I was pretty much stayed to myself and close group of friends. So again, never had any need or practice with it. Law school, I realized I needed to do it, and I didn't have any relevant practice or experience. So I found books, which is what I think an introvert would do. And I read several books about it and about just being more personable generally. Also, I joined Toastmasters to get over my fear of speaking in public, to get over my fears of not sounding right or looking weird. So that gave me some practical experience. And then most importantly is I just jumped in and started going to events. And even when I wasn't comfortable, and it took a while, but eventually I became comfortable in these settings, was used to doing it. And now it's no big deal, but it took me just jumping in to conquer that.
And Andrea, even though you're an extreme extrovert, did you find yourself preparing to some degree when it came to going to that networking event? And if so, how?
In Tarrant County, I only knew a handful of people. And no matter how extroverted you are, going into a group that you just see a wall of people that you don't know, and they're all lawyers and very intimidating, isn't the easiest thing in the world. So I used to bring a friend with me. A friend of mine from law school had graduated the same time. We both started practicing in Fort Worth at the same time, and we would plan to go to happy hours and events together, stick by each other's side, help each other carry the conversation forward. Another thing that I do even now, where most events I go to, either I know somebody or I'm connected to the group and I have something to talk about, like a conference in my practice area. I like to kind of keep track of little conversation movers, things that I can pull out of my pocket when I need to feel like the quietness of a conversation needs to be smoothed over. So things like asking somebody, what are you looking forward to right now? Do you have anything coming up that you're excited about? And you will get really fun responses to that. Trips that people are excited about, whether they're welcoming someone new to their family, whether they're buying a house. And it can be a little more interesting than just the plain old, well, what do you do? What area of law do you practice?
Yeah. And I would also prepare myself in some ways. Like the thing I would do would be try to see what kind of event am I going to, right? Is this going to be something where judges are at? Is this a family law event, which is kind of more my practice area? Is this just a general event? So I would look at who am I going to be talking to and how am I going to bring up the things that I want to bring up and connect with people at that event. So if I'm going to a family law event, that's going to be easy for me, right? But if it's more of a young lawyer event where I'm kind of in the minority as far as practice areas go, I often kind of do the same thing where I ask, hey, do you have any fun trials coming up? What's a recent trial that you just had that you thought was a really, really neat experience or something you learned or just really neat set of fact pattern or something like that. And people, especially lawyers, love talking about the cases that they're a part of and some of the war stories that they have. But I think looking at the type of it in advance also helped me kind of prepare for who I was going to be talking to in networking. Brian?
Yes, I agree. And to sort of both of y'all's points, the thing that I had to get my mind around is networking events are a type of event, and you don't need to, like in my mind, I kind of compared it to a high school or college party when I was in law school. Like this is a group of friends all hanging out, but it's not. People go to these things specifically to meet new people. That's the point. And even if it is a little formulistic to ask certain icebreaker questions or whatever, that's the point. And it's nothing to be ashamed of. They're useful for a reason and they're used as for a reason. So don't shy away from them because you feel like they're, a tool. They are a tool and they work.
Right. So when y'all were law students, if y'all remember, just a few years ago, well, for us, it's a little bit longer than it was a few years ago, but did y'all have business cards and how did you utilize those?
We had them. We'd hand them out. And frankly, we had no idea what we were doing. What I would tell law students now or junior attorneys is hand those business cards out, especially junior attorneys, or excuse me, especially law students, hand them out and tell people, I would really love to grab coffee with you or a quick lunch. And if you can find a way to get their contact information too and follow up with them, because as an attorney now, I've been practicing nearly 10 years. I love taking law students to lunch or junior attorneys to lunch and sharing information with them, but I'm busy and I'm going to lose that card and I'm going to forget to email them about it. So hand them out, but also take a minute and try to get that lawyer's business card or pull them up on LinkedIn and then reach out and see if they'll get together with you. And I think most of them would really be generous with their time and take you out to lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything Andrea just said, but I want to focus in on the most important thing you can do. Business cards are not great. Use them if you have them. Get their business card, because you want to be in control and in charge of the follow-up contact. You don't want to have them be in charge of sending you an email. And the other thing, and we might get to this later, but maybe I'm jumping ahead, but when you get that card, don't just use it for the contact information. What I used to do is write down, what did I talk about with this person today? And put a date and, you know, talked about kid, and then put the kid's name or whatever it is. Because that way, when you send the follow-up email, you have some substance you can bring up. And then whenever you meet them for coffee, again, you can like look up their website bio. You can find more things to talk about, more things to bring up. And you don't have to be as worried about, well, what am I going to say? Because you have kind of a list already set out.
Right. And I think the exchange, the two-sided exchange, clearly is the best way to go, right? That way they have your information but I think you're right, Brian. I think the onus is on you as a networker to reach out to them. And I can tell you, practicing not as long as everyone, but for 7 years in November, I think I've handed my card out to 20 plus law students and or first or second year attorneys. And I think out of those 20 cards, I've had one or two people email me back. And when I used to get those cards, I would definitely want to try to email within a few days. And I try to always have some kind of hook, like you were talking about, Brian, something that can get us back to that conversation. So if I'm talking to them and I ask what kind of practice area they're in and they say employment law, you know, I just saw a really interesting employment law case. I'd love to send it to you in an email. And just Google employment law case. Doesn't have to be, you know, you can be the top five results in Google, but now we got something to talk about, right? Have you ever kind of done anything like that, Brian or Andrea?
I think that's a great idea, Alston. What I've usually done is send a link to an interesting article that I've read recently and a quick piece of why I think it's interesting. And then I might ask, hey, could we maybe get coffee or lunch? And I would love to hear your thoughts about this and your experience.
Yeah, I did the same thing, especially if you can find news stories that are even halfway relevant to something you've talked about in the past or to connect it to their practice. You know, now I was actually thinking in this call, there was a few months ago, I went back through my old Gmail, and looked at all the emails I sent, like my 3L year of law school when I was looking for a job. And I was a little embarrassed by some of the crazy emails I was sending to attorneys in town. But at the same time, I mean, that's just what you need to do. That's what you got to do. And I'm glad I did it, because it's made me a better attorney, better connected person. But it's definitely I was not very subtle about what I was doing. And I think that's okay.
Yeah. So we live in a day where social media is extremely prevalent. Have y'all used your social media accounts to help you network via electronically through social media, as opposed to going to the events? Or have you also kind of used social media as a research tool when you're going to be networking with certain groups and people? Brian?
I have no social media other than LinkedIn, and I only have LinkedIn because you have to have it to look at anyone else's LinkedIn. And I don't
really spoken like a true introvert.
Yes. Well, it's great, because I don't even have to come up with excuses for not liking something on Facebook or whatever. I just, that doesn't even come up. So no, I don't use social media at all. I think it can be used, but even if it is, it's got to be, it's the frosting to the cake of real personal contact. And I think that's the thing to remember, is you have to actually talk to people, in whether it's a phone call or what, or in person, but you have, that's got to be the real substance and the real focus. The link or social media would just be some means to get to more face-to-face conversations.
Throw my two cents in there. I have lots of social media. It's locked down. It's all clean. You know, there's nothing of concern there, which is how all lawyers' social media should be. But it's my personal place to share thoughts about my family and pictures of my dog. But I use LinkedIn a lot. And I really do think that LinkedIn is becoming more useful for lawyers. I think lawyers used to not really view it as that important because we thought, well, our resume and our firm website speaks for us. But being corporate counsel, I no longer have a presence on a firm website. So I like to have something out there. And I've gotten pretty savvy with it and watched other lawyers who are savvy with it. They will share each other's statuses and congratulate each other when somebody gets a promotion or has an article published. They'll share interesting news that affects their field. And I've started to notice, and I've shared this with young attorneys, a lot of success around you is the way people perceive you. And if you're pushing out cool stories about yourself, and I brag on myself on social media all the time, if I get an award or publish something, and then people see it, and then they say, oh, that's really cool. Then they have something to talk about when you're in a social setting, or if you've seen that somebody got a promotion or had a cool interview come out, you've got something to talk about with them in a social setting or in a networking setting. And it also builds a lot of goodwill between you and other people. You know, lawyers need to network with other lawyers. A lot of our business comes from other lawyers, and a lot of our career opportunities in the future come from other lawyers, but it also comes from non-lawyers. If you're in construction, knowing a bunch of GCs is going to be really important. I got my job through networking with friends in the insurance business. And just having that feed out there, having people know who you are and have goodwill towards you, because when you have something good happen, they share it on social media, on LinkedIn, they congratulate you. I think those are all really amazing networking tools that you can use now. Doesn't take that much time. And if you're an introvert, it's great because you just clack, clack, clack and have cool things put out there.
Well, and definitely, Andrea is great at that. I've actually started a few conversations with her because I read something on her social, on her LinkedIn about what she was doing. So back to another point Alston made though, is yeah, get one, and if nothing else, just review it occasionally, because you can find information to start conversations with other people. And that's always a good thing.
So Andrea, do you also follow firm social media accounts and try to check cases or things that are going on with them to help with you networking?
Especially, we use a lot of outside counsel. So I follow their social media, and I follow, particularly on LinkedIn, I follow the lawyers that work at those places. And when I'm at events where there's nothing to talk about, it's great to see something and see, oh, so-and-so just started working on this new matter, or they got a really great verdict. Instant conversation starter, and then you've got somewhere to go next. And it's nice to watch what's happening at firms. One of the firms that we use all the time recently, a woman that I know and am friends with through Tarrant County Young Lawyers joined, and I saw that, and she saw that I'm at Higginbotham, and then we reached out to each other on email, set a lunch, and said, how exciting is this? Now my friend is working on my outside legal matters. And we might not have made that connection. She would have when she started seeing all of the Higginbotham matters, but it would have taken me a little longer if I hadn't seen on LinkedIn, oh, she changed firms and now I get to work with her.
So obviously you can network with people at happy hours, and you can do it online. What are some other places that you feel like there are some missed opportunities in networking, where whether it be events that people may not think of places you can connect with people? And that may require a little more thought than usual.
Well, the truth is, everything you go to is a potential networking opportunity. I've never gotten any business from some of these things yet. I will put an asterisk by that. But I remember, especially in law school, when I was looking for broadening my network, which I still am, of course, but that was especially when I was hitting it hard. I mean, even like birthday parties, if there was a kid's birthday party, I was going around asking, you know, the adults, you know, hey, who are you? What do you do in town? That kind of stuff. So I don't think there is anything that's not a good networking event. And I remember I would even put my wife made fun of me for this, but if we were going to go have dinner with some friends, I would ask, well, what do they do, the new couple? Like, where does she work? Where does he work? And then I would prepare. One of them was a chemist. Oh, let me go refresh some chemistry knowledge I have so I can have something to talk about that's chemistry related. So I just think everything, I mean, it's kind of a burden to some extent, but it's enjoyable once you get used to it because you can really learn a lot about new things and new people.
So what is the atomic weight of carbon, Brian?
6, I believe.
Okay.
Amazing if that was true.
I'm pretty sure that's right. I feel good about that.
I mean, I'm an extrovert. I've got to have a busy social calendar. So one of the things that I've done ever since I moved to Fort Worth is join a lot of young professional groups that are aligned with things that I enjoy. So here in Tarrant County, we've got the Clyburn Foundation. They have the 180s, which is a really fun group that has little events and concerts. The Modern Art Museum has the Modern Contemporaries, which has lectures in the halls and in the galleries. They have art projects, and you meet a lot of people who they're young, they're professional, they're here in Fort Worth, they're art-minded, and it's a setting where you're talking about something else, music or art or a band or something that you like, but naturally you learn about these people, what they do. And I have been able to bring business into my company, and I've also been able to meet other lawyers or other professionals in Fort Worth that I've been able to refer clients or friends to because I met them through a social setting, but now I know what they do. I've spent enough time with them that I trust their judgment and their business acumen. So looking for those, if you just Google in your area, young professional groups, and pick ones that align with something you like. You're gonna find them for biking. You're gonna find them for cooking. You're gonna find them for every type of thing you're interested in. And I also think these days, a lot of us are getting more knowledgeable and more cognizant of the fact that not every event has to have drinking involved. Some people don't want to drink, or maybe they can't drink. And it's good to have other events where we can network with each other. And those artistic events can be really great places for that.
And I think that's a great point, Brian.
One other place I just thought about that I actually have gotten some referrals and how I've used to send referrals is co-counsels on cases and opposing counsels on cases. Whenever you're working with another lawyer on something and you realize that person is just competent at what they're doing, then that's a good way to, and sometimes you don't, not much chit chat probably, but you can tell they're a decent person. Do that. And that's another broader point of just be respectable and in everything you do, and your reputation is important.
Right. Don't try to file sanctions for every time you disagree with someone, because you never know when that next case or where that next case is coming from. And it could easily come from OC, right? Opposing counsel. You know, another great, I think Andrew brings up a great point with professional like organizations. So even though the Clyburn has to do with music, right? Classical music specifically with piano competitions, and the Modern has to do with art. Those are professionally minded groups, right? I'm not going to use an example because I don't want to offend anyone, but there are definitely examples of groups that you were probably run into more professionals than others. And I think the arts is a good way to break into that. You know, we have a great civic engagement program here called Steer Fort Worth, where a lot of young professionals can meet up. They meet with council members, and that's a great organization to be a part of. A lot of emerging leaders of Fort Worth kind of are part of that group. And I'm sure if you're living in any big city, they're going to have groups like this that you can kind of meet people, maybe not necessarily in the legal profession, but networking never turns off. So maybe that person that's a financial advisor or a business owner is going to need someone like you in their life. And then, because you networked, you have that ability now. Reading both of your bios, I realize that y'all are a lot smarter and accomplished when it comes to your educational prowess than myself. I did not graduate top 10% of my law class. I was not a part of the law review. So there's, I think, something to be said with networking, because I, not to say that I had the most prestigious career, but I am the president of the TCYLA, I think mostly because I'm networking. So do you feel like with your accomplishments that it makes it easier to network? And do you incorporate that into the elevator pitch when you meet people?
Your GPA or your scholarships when you're networking. Now, federal clerkships bring that up every time. Brian, I hope you do. No, because people don't want to, they don't want to hear that. And especially with LinkedIn, I've got it all there. If somebody wants to know, they can find it. But I think what you're saying, Alston, about networking for jobs is so important. One thing I tell a lot of young lawyers is you may really like your job right now, but you have no idea where life is going to take you. Things could change at your job. Things could change in your life. You might need to move because of family reasons. You just have no idea. And so when I first started in Fort Worth, I loved my firm, still really good friends with the lawyers at that firm. But I networked and met people and made friends and purposefully made sure people knew a little bit about what I did and that I was competent. And there came a time where I realized that as much as I liked my firm, I did not like litigation and I wanted to change jobs. And rather than, you're not just going to quit a job and go out there. So I started quietly telling people, hey, I want to go in-house. And getting an in-house job is not that easy. You can't, a lot of them never make it to a job listing board, but I was able to, through a friend of a friend, say, hey, I have this interest. She introduced me to some people at Higginbotham. We sat down and talked a couple of times. They created a job for me. They didn't even have a role when I got this job. And that would never have happened if I hadn't been purposefully networking all the time, looking for the people who might open doors for me in the future.
Yeah. And being the smartest, most knowledgeable lawyer in the world means nothing if nobody knows you and you don't have any clients and you don't have anyone giving you work. And in my case, I did have good grades in law school and I did not have a job offer when I was a 3L. And I was able to get it through referrals. And I got my first job offer. I've had 5 jobs now, and 4 of those 5 were never posted jobs. I got them through networking and connections. And even this is another secret that, a lot of for law students, even if you get the job in that great big firm that pays a lot of money and all that kind of stuff, you have to network within the firm in order to get any work. And you need work in order to show your value and why are we paying you money in the first place? So there is no way to avoid networking. You can call it different things if you want to, but it's the principle of you have to be known. You have to show your work. You have to get out there in order to provide any value. And that's just common sense and true.
So when I left law school, I also didn't have a job secured, and I did everything I could to really put my nose to the grindstone and network with as many people as possible. I offered to work for free for a week. Let me just get in your office. Do you have digital media evidence you want me to run through and like summarize? I found every way possible to try to just get in front of people and be like, look, I'm not expecting you to make me a job offer, but if you need anything around the office, I'm interested in helping out. I'm glad to do it. And I think because of that, I think it lined up to my job, my first job out of law school. I think, in fact, I, when I, one of my first jobs was because I knew someone from law school said, hey, you should go talk to this other person who I talked to and who said, hey, I think I know this one firm that's hiring. And it ended up being the first job and really the only job offer I got that led to other things. And I think that having that first job is important. Having the networking skill to get you that next job, it never stops, right? You never know when you're going to be able to or need to switch jobs. I mean, just look at Shannon Gracie, one of the largest law firms in Fort Worth, disbanded a few years ago. And you know, a lot of people were looking for jobs because of that. And you never have to, you always want to continue networking, never stop. Brian, did you find Toastmasters and other groups like that helpful to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a fear of public speaking, which is very common. You know, there's a Jerry Seinfeld joke that, which is based on the truth that he said that people are more afraid of public speaking than dying, which means most people would rather be in the coffin at the funeral than giving the eulogy. But definitely, I was afraid of public speaking, and I thought, well, I'm in law school, and especially that 1L year when you had to stand up and recite the facts of cases, I thought I need to get over this fear. So I joined Toastmasters. And what was good about that is not only did it help me get over the public speaking fear and I think make me a better speaker, it was going and joining a group that I had knew nobody. Most of them were a lot older than me. Most of them were middle-aged, you know, in their 50s and 60s. And there I was 4 years old, whatever. And it just was a way to get out of my comfort zone, which is what I needed. So, and my other big thing that I did in law school was got active in TCYLA and the Tarrant County Bar Association. And through those activities, and especially actually doing something in those groups, not just going to a few happy hours, but actually saying, hey, I'll help do whatever task you're doing. That's how I got my first job offer, was someone saw I had a work ethic and they said, hey, I know someone who's wanting to hire. Let me send your resume over.
Andrew, did you do any kind of being the extreme extrovert that you are? Did you feel like you didn't have to do events like that? Or did you practice any kind of public speaking, or do you just kind of do it organically?
I've always loved public speaking. And in fact, when I was in college, I remember being at a job my first like week and there was a big presentation and my boss, quote unquote, was like, oh, I hate doing these. I hate public speaking. And I said, I'll do it. You know, 21-year-old me was fine with it. But even if it comes naturally to you, there's always learning to do. And my first boss at Anderson Riddle, Jeff Anderson, who a lot of people in Tarrant County might know, was so good at helping me learn just professionalism, honestly, what's an appropriate topic to chat with people about, even things you might not think about. Like I remember one time we ran into a mediator at a happy hour who was working on a current case of ours. And I didn't say anything, you know, unprofessional, but I said something like, oh, you know, good to see you. Hope your thoughts on that mediation are coming along well. And Jeff pulled me aside later and said, hey, you don't really talk to the mediator at social events about the mediation. Seems pretty obvious. It just didn't occur to me. But so I'm always keeping my kind of scanning the horizons for tips about what's most effective in networking or in chatting with people, what topics to stay away from. And I read a lot of articles about networking and conversation that might tell you things that you might not think about, like asking somebody what they do for a living can be difficult because you might hear that they just got fired from their job and that really is hard for them. Asking somebody if they have children, you don't know if they're struggling with infertility or they just lost a child. So those topics, which seem really normal and we talk about them all the time, might not be the best topics. So I'm always keeping my ears open for better ways of being a conversationalist and putting people at ease.
Well, those are really good points as well. And sometimes you don't even think about things like that, right? That someone may have lost a job or something worse just by asking some of those familial questions. So now, Andrea, at the beginning of this discussion on networking, you said you'd always bring that friend to help you kind of bounce back on. What are some tips when you are either picking the friend you're going to go to the networking event with, and what are some pitfalls with having that safety buddy?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, you want to pick someone who you respect as a professional, somebody that you would recommend to your clients or to your family, somebody that you know is going to conduct themselves professionally. You might have a really great buddy from college or law school that is extremely fun, but likes to play devil's advocate a lot in conversation, or thinks that it's cool to bring up crazy stories about their weekend in Vegas. You don't want to pick that person, and you want someone, hopefully, who ideally doesn't practice the same area of law as you, but you know what, if they do, then you can just trade war stories back and forth, and that's fun too. I think it's hard for me to say as an extrovert what the pitfalls might be, because I'm going to talk regardless. Perhaps for us extroverts, the pitfall might be learning when to stand back and let the conversation go to your wing buddy, networking buddy, friend. Don't dominate the conversation. Be sure to not use them as a crutch, but use them as a springboard. And you want to have a good understanding with them too, so that you're not just kind of walking around shoulder to shoulder at happy hour. You want to show up together, make each other feel comfortable, disappear. But sometimes maybe you have a little code with each other of, oh no, I got stuck talking to that partner from that firm who just wants to chat endlessly about football statistics. And me, I love football statistics, but maybe I don't want to do that for an hour and a half.
Brian, did you ever have that networking buddy?
What I ended up finding, at least for me, was I'd much prefer to go to these by myself, because I found two types of friends you'd bring. One type would slow you down because they wanted to cling to you there because they were comfortable with you. And then it prevented you from getting out and meeting anybody, which was the whole point of going. If you're just going to hang out with that friend, you could have done that at home. Or you came up with a friend who would just dominate the whole conversation and prevent you from meaningfully interacting with any other people. And either way, I thought, no, I'm better off just going by myself. Plus, if you want to leave early or you want to stay later or whatever it is, you don't have to worry about the other person's schedule. So I always prefer going by myself. Even if you're afraid of looking kind of like the wallflower standing over in the corner, that's okay. Maybe some extrovert like Andrea sees you and pulls you in, and there you go. You just accomplished your mission of meeting somebody.
I am known to do that.
Having that buddy is definitely a double-edged sword, because in a lot of ways, if you're just kind of struggling to get in that next group, right? Someone you were talking to had to leave. Maybe that conversation has winded down. You have someone to kind of bounce back as a home base and say, okay, well, who are they talking to? Maybe they can introduce themselves to me, right? But you do want to be careful. I think, just like Andrea said, that you're not using it as a magnet, right? You should be polar opposites to a certain degree. You can come together for a little bit, but then you got to push apart. So use each other to help you out. And I think having that dual goal of both of you wanting to network, as opposed to just, oh, I'm going to bring my friend so I have someone that I'm comfortable with. I think the best advice I could give you when it comes to finding that buddy is someone who wants to network as well. You can't have someone that's just there to be your safety blanket, right? So
I think this goes back to a point I made at the beginning, which is these are not parties, and you shouldn't think of them as a party, even if they're called a holiday party, they're not. And the goal, and make sure if you go with someone, make sure that other person knows that the point is to meet new people.
Right. Brian, do you have any networking horror stories of when you tried to network with someone or someone tried to network with you where it just got a little awkward or you got embarrassed or something like that that you would be willing to share?
I can't think of anything especially bad. But I did have a internship once that before I really was very good at networking, because I hadn't practiced, I hadn't taken it seriously as its own activity that has skills and deserves practice. An internship where I could tell while I was there that I was not connecting with people and I wasn't fitting in very well. And that was partially my fault because I just wasn't taking the right angles and perspectives to make those connections. So I don't have any especially bad, funny war stories, but definitely it's not always been smooth. I've had a whole lot of conversations that never led to anything. I've had a whole lot of conversations that I thought this is never going to end. And I've had a whole lot of conversations and, you know, experiences where clearly there wasn't a good connection made. And that's okay. That's just how it goes.
I think Brian just said something really important that us kind of old hacks at networking understand is you need an out of conversation. You need something in your pocket. What a lot of people will use is, oh, I need to go refresh my drink. Oh, I need to go grab a bite. Or if those things are not appropriate in that moment, I like to use, oh, you know what? I just saw so-and-so. I need to go say hi to them. What I've also heard a lot of people saying lately, and I think this is so perfect, is, well, I'm going to try to work the room, say hi to a few people, try to meet a few people. Like Brian said, these are networking events. They're professional events. Nobody's going to get their feelings hurt because you're wandering off to go meet new people. That's why you're there.
Right. Yeah. I think that's another good point. You know, I have a fun story and I'm not going to use any names, but I remember networking as a 3L, like not even an attorney yet. And talking to an attorney, just asking his area practice and discussing that. And then Cat Hopkins, who we all know, I named one name. So she comes up because at that time she's, I think, maybe president or about to be president of the Young Lawyers as well. This is a while ago. And she says, hey, why don't you all get together and take a picture for the Tarrant County Young Lawyers newsletter. That's perfect. Great. I've got my arm around this guy, talking to another friend that I went to law school with, and we're kind of using each other as the buddy system. He's there. And so all three of us taking a picture, and we take the picture, and the guy who I'm networking with says, thank you for the picture you're sending me later. She's like, yeah, no worries. It'll be on the newsletter. He's like, no, I'm talking about the naked picture you're going to send me later. And I couldn't have shrunk down next to this guy anymore. I literally met him 45 seconds ago, and he said this so embarrassing thing. And I was embarrassed being even like my arm around him. Like I felt like I had to go up to Kat afterwards and explain, look, I don't know you, but I want you to know that that comment I don't approve of. And I just met that guy, and I'm not associated with him, but I just want to let you know that I felt that it was inappropriate. She said, that's just the way he is. And I was like, okay, well, that's not okay. but yeah, I think that's probably the best way I could have handled it, is just going up to her afterwards and just explaining, look, I don't agree with what just happened. I obviously didn't know that was going to happen. And I'm sorry that it did, even though this is completely not my fault.
I think in today's day and age, we're all a little, most of us, not that person, a little more sensitive to people saying inappropriate things or rude things. And I think if that does happen, Alston, I really liked that you went and made Kat feel more comfortable. Kat's a wonderful person who, you know, can get through anything, but being on the receiving end of an awkward, impolite comment like that, inappropriate comment like that, it's nice when somebody else stands up and says, hey, that wasn't appropriate. And I know it wasn't appropriate. So don't associate them with me. And maybe says it to the person who said the inappropriate thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Be polite, but no reason not to, and call a spade a spade, or whatever the saying is. So one thing I have done, made some faux pas before, and I think everyone does this, is names. Names are hard, especially those instances when you're 85, 90% sure you remember the name. And you're like, well, is that enough for me to go up and just say, hey, so-and-so, or do I need to like confirm it? I would just say there, cause I've done it before. I thought I'm feeling good enough with this guess. And then I was wrong. So no one gets too offended, I don't think, but it's also always acceptable to just ask for a name, even if you know for sure you've met the person, or even if they have already introduced themselves to you and remember your name. There's nothing wrong with asking for a name.
I'm the worst at names. I feel like as soon as I hear a name, it's gone out of my head 3 seconds later. And I think that's also where a good buddy system comes into play. If you're around people, even not just the buddy, the networking buddy, just in general, having friends around, say, hey, do you know that person? Or, hey, can you introduce that person, yourself to that person so I can hear their name? Me and my brother would do that. He would see someone approaching and he would say, oh, I don't know their name, like real quick. And so that would be my signal after, you know, 30 seconds to talking. My brother is really rude. Sorry, he didn't introduce me. My name's Austin. What's yours? And that way he can hear the name. That's a little networking trick that we'd always do with each other to just get the name. And man, I'm like the worst out of it. I know there's tricks like mnemonics and like, oh, his name starts with T or his name is Tony. I'm going to remember Tony the Tiger and stuff like that. I don't know if it's helped me. I just try really, really hard.
Well, I don't know if it's a trick, but what I did, and I really got where I was okay at names, because if you just write it down as soon as you can, and then you review it after the event, and then maybe you review it again the next day when you send a follow-up email, that does help sink it into your memories. I don't know if I call it a trick. It's just, you know, time helps with those kinds of things.
I like LinkedIn for this, and I'm a total LinkedIn apologist on this podcast today, apparently, but because people put their profile pictures up. So I will add people on LinkedIn after I meet them at an event, look at their picture, look at their name, look at their, you know, work history or education history. And then if I know I'm going to see them at another event, it's so much easier to hop on LinkedIn, remind myself what they look like, and then show up at the event. If I see the name and the face, it works a lot better.
One thing that I have seen for myself that has worked or helped is try to use their name 3 times within the first 5 minutes, right? Oh, your name's Brian. Brian, nice to meet you. So there's two. And then you can just say, so Brian, tell me something. And you don't want to do it like super back to back, because then it's kind of like, why is this guy saying my name so many times? It's kind of weird. But if you use it with 3 times in the first 5 minutes, it won't seem, if you space it out a little bit, it won't seem very weird. And that kind of helps drive it into at least my mind. Maybe it doesn't work for everyone, but for me, it's helped. Well, I think this has been a good conversation. Is there any last minute tips that you think you could give when it comes to networking or last thoughts? Andrew, we'll start with you.
I think we've really covered a lot of what I typically share with people. And I would just encourage everybody trying to network to be bold, get out there, say things, do things. Know that you are going to say or do something that makes you feel a little weird later. Like when I went and talked to the mediator about the mediation at a social event, and you're going to recover from it and have a great career anyway. So be bold.
Brian?
I think Andrea's point's probably the most important, is you just got to get out there and do it, even if you have some fear of it. One other tip I'd bring up that we hadn't come across yet in this conversation was, I was always kind of worried about, at least at first, what would I say? Like, I feel like I wasn't very interesting. And I think the better mindset is to approach it with real curiosity. Like, you actually don't just pretend like you're going to ask some questions. Like, don't go give depositions to people that you meet, but actually be curious about learning something new about this person or about their job or about their hobby or whatever it is. And so you can walk away and say, I actually learned something about pickleball. I didn't know what pickleball was until I had a 35-minute conversation with someone today about it. So just take a mindset of wanting to learn new things and meet new people, and that's going to carry you far.
And I think my final tip would just be kind of an echoing of what y'all said, which is practice makes perfect. You know, everyone's going to have the awkward silence here and there. And you know, when you're first starting out in any new career, as either a law student or a first and second year associate, it's going to take practice. No one's an amazing networker immediately, maybe except for Andrea, but besides Andrea, most of us have to work at least a little bit to do that. And, you know, you're going to pick up tips and tricks and stuff like that along the way, just by having your 10,000 hours, so to say. With that being said, this has been Austin Gardner with the Tarrant County Young Lawyers Association's President's Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to our series, Things I Wish I Knew as a Young Attorney, as we discuss networking 101. We hope you subscribe to our podcast and join us for future episodes. I want to thank our guests, Andrea Palmer and Brian Singletary, for joining us today. For more information on what is happening with our organization, please check out our website at www.tcyla.org. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on a brand new episode of the TCYLA President's Podcast. Have a great day.